What's up, my kings and queens and all in between? It's Andrew Velasquez with another episode of Mindful Artist Podcast. Thank you so much for joining us and returning back. I really appreciate your support and your ongoing love. Make sure that you like, subscribe, and follow us on social media, on Instagram and Mindful Artist Podcast. And if you really enjoy this episode, go to our reviews, give us some ratings, share it with a friend. The more you do that, the more likely we're going to come up on other people's algorithms. And again, today, your one-stop shop for all things mindfulness, creativity, while being an entrepreneur. I have an amazing guest, you guys. This is such a talented artist that I've looked up to for a long time. So grateful that they had some time to make for our Mindful Artist Podcast. So you guys, I have Roshar. Say hello, Roshar. Yay.
Hello, everyone.
Bravo.
Hello.
Bravo.
Thank you for having me.
You look amazing. Love the suit.
You're
on brand with the color scheme and the cool tones. You guys, Roshar is an international makeup artist based in Los Angeles, California, with work featured in Vogue, Harper's Bazaar, Elle, Glamour, Marie Claire, among many other publications. Since early childhood, Roshar had a fascination with painting and fashion. Immersed in the underground club scene of the late 80s and the early 90s, Roshar explored the world of role-playing costumes that further complemented his way of looking at things. As a platform artist, Roshar has given makeup presentations not only in the US, but also in Switzerland, Indonesia, Cairo, Rome, Japan, India, Canada, Singapore, Taiwan, and Australia, just to name a few. Literally, you're international. Known for his work with color and transformation, you guys, Roshar's work has become easily recognizable. Welcome, welcome. How are you?
I'm very good. Enjoying the rainy weather and getting ready to sit down and talk with you. It's highlight of my day.
Yay, thank you. Yeah, we were kicking this off season two. We're here. It's time to just spread that message of love and light and help inspire this younger generation that's up and coming. And I really want to get to know a little bit of your origins and where are you from? What happened as baby Roshar? Were you always this creative? Like tell us the clip notes of your upbringings.
I would say I've always kind of had a little bit of a weird creative streak, but I think where it comes from is because from an early age, I was very curious about everything. I was curious about life and, you know, like things and, you know, space, everything. I had such a strong curiosity. And one of those things that I was really curious about, which actually I ended up being obsessed with, was light. And the fact that light would, if it would curve around an object, that actually gave me information that it was not a flat object. It was something that had a shape. I mean, being 8 years old, I mean, it's kind of, you know, that's how curious about things that I was.
Yeah.
And eventually I started drawing and painting when I was a little kid because I was so fascinated by light. The next step was almost like to take what I was seeing out in the world, process it through my brain, and then put it out there. So the fact of taking like a circle and but just by shading, it becomes a three-dimensional sphere, floored me. And that's kind of where my beginnings came from.
Yeah, that's cool. That makes so much sense into your portfolio and how recognizable your artwork is. Because I feel that is definitely Roshar's like aesthetic. It's three-dimensional, spheric, you know, hyaluronic, almost like different kind of dimensions of color. And it always has that pop, like it stands out, you know, it almost, and I've seen your work in person too. It looks Photoshopped, it looks unreal, but it's real, you know what I mean? Like that's how good it is. And it's so
well
cool.
I do take like seven different colors to make them look like one, so
exactly.
That's probably where that comes from.
That's so dope. I love that. So did you go to art school as a kid, or this is just like
no,
on your own?
This was really on my own. I mean, what really propelled me was the curiosity aspect, you know, always being curious about things, but also too, I grew up in a really small town in Texas, and I was a little punk rock kid. And if you do the math, you know, 80s, punk rock kid, small town in Texas, doesn't lend itself for a good, a healthy upbringing. So I eventually left and moved out on my own. And I was also involved in the underground club scene at that time, which was really a lifeline for me. Being in that small town, I was going now an hour outside of that town, and I was finding people that thought like me, looked like me, listened to the same music. Whereas before, I was just basically run out of the town because I was so strange. So when being involved in that underground club scene, I was always around girls, and I figured that if I did their hair and their makeup, I could move in with them, which I ended up doing, and being their own little personal hair and makeup artist. And basically, it was survival because I, like I said, I was 15. I lived moved away on my own, and so I didn't know what a makeup artist was. I was just really, because this was, again, this was like the late 80s. I look a little bit younger than I probably
You look
am,
great. I'm trying to do the math, but were you aware of Kevin at the time? Kevin O'Quan?
No, not at
No.
all. I didn't even know what a makeup artist was. I
Got it.
mean,
Got it.
at that time, you know, keep in mind, this was like the late 80s.
Pre-social
So
media.
even back then, you know, the only way you would know who even a model was is if they were credited in the magazine. So if you usually, I mean, I didn't really see makeup credits either, but I didn't know the difference. I mean, I'm 15 years old. I don't know if they're like doing their own makeup. All I was attracted to and noticing was like the clothing and the glamour and the context that was going on.
That's so cool. All right, so then you're growing up now with these awesome club kid girls and dolling them up. And I mean, how did you make your living? Were you working? Did you?
Well, no, I mean, this was late 80s. So this was this late 80s, early 90s. So this was really underground club scene. Like it wasn't really the club kid aspect yet. This was more like at the time in these clubs, like the looks were like old Hollywood, like Jean Harlow, Elizabeth Taylor's. Like I was
Fun.
bleaching their hair and, you know, making them look like, you know, it was like uber glamour. It wasn't until like the mid 90s where the club kid, I started getting involved in the club kid scene. And that's when I was no longer doing makeup on other people, but I was doing it now on myself. And it was, again, a sense of survival. I didn't know what a makeup artist was, but this is how we got paid and how we had a roof over our head. It was basically a job. And plus, I loved to create. So we were turning ourselves into like, you know, Indian deities or, you know, more like walking conceptual pieces of art. So it wasn't like, you know, just like a regular drag look. It was like just fully conceptualized,
Next level.
next level looks. And I really credit a lot of what I do with that because I find that people that, you know, especially if they come from like an art background or this type of background that I'm describing, you know, we were looking at things like not that what was in front of us, but the, what the possibilities could be. So it wasn't about following lines, it was more about creating them.
It was almost looking into the future too, like ahead of your time and just thinking of what fashion and glamour would evolve to. Like, you know what I mean?
In a way, we weren't thinking that far ahead. I mean, we were in that scene, you know, this is when designers like Gautier and Mugler and all these people would actually come to these clubs to kind of get inspired. So we were just, I mean, I particularly was more interested in looking like a, you know, a high-end fashion model. I mean, but keep in mind, I had like no hair. You know, I had, you know, I was like 30 years younger. I had no eyebrows. I was about 20 shades lighter. If you go on my Instagram and if you really do a deep dive, you can find some pictures from
Oh,
back
you know I'm
then.
going
But
to. Well, and
oh, and
also
for
that
all
was,
platforms.
of course,
Sorry.
and that was like the original filter, right? Was just in your fascination with light and the reflection of it with cosmetics makes a lot of sense because that was a look, was to be paled out and have that like immaculate kind of flawless complexion, right?
Well, basically, yeah, but I mean, it also helped the fact that we were like 20 years old,
That
you
too.
know.
That as well. Yeah. I love that. That's so cool. And then Okay, so let's fast forward a little bit into adulthood. And so growing up within that environment, did you discover any mentors that kind of guided you?
Again, no. I mean, this
No.
was all like self-preservation and survival. And even at that point, I didn't know what a makeup artist was. It
Yeah.
wasn't until, I mean, are you familiar with the movie Party Monster?
Of course,
Okay.
iconic, yes.
So, and those that are watching, you know, if you want to know a little bit of, you know, some history and also to something that is referenced in the fashion industry, you know, this movie,
100%.
Party Monster, was basically kind of like almost like a documentary, not a documentary, but it was a movie based on what happened at the time. So what basically happened, basically I being involved in the club scene and that being my livelihood for so many years, you know, now, you know, because and you'll see this in the movie, because of there was tax evasion, it wasn't me. There was a murder, there wasn't me. I wasn't involved. But what ended up happening is this thing that was for so many years kind of like my world and my everything, my know-how was starting to shut down. So I'm in New York and I'm sitting there thinking like, what am I going to do? You know, I guess I was like 21 at the time, and I thought, well, you know, I have to think about a career. I'm a high school dropout. I dropped out my freshman year. I have no formal training. I don't have family that can actually help me in any of that. So I thought, well, you know, I'm kind of decent with hair, but I got to go to school for it. And I didn't have the money for that. And I thought, well, you know, I'm okay with makeup, so maybe I'll try that. So it, again, out of necessity, I still didn't know what a makeup artist was. I was just really trying to figure out my key thing of survival. And the first thing that you think of when you're like, okay, I'll become a makeup artist is what? Working at a counter. Because again, I didn't know what a makeup artist was. And you know, this was now like mid 90s, and I mean there were maybe like nine makeup artists all over the world, you know, that was were utilized. It wasn't like, you know, as saturated as it is now. And so I ended up working on a counter, and I'm not going to say who it is, but I worked there for a while, and then 9/11 happened, and I transferred from New York to Maui. So I lived in Hawaii for a couple of years, and that was what was really pivotal for me, because like again, working at a counter, I didn't really know what a makeup artist was. I thought like what I'm going to do is move up in the company and possibly become a trainer. But I didn't, you know, it didn't really dawn on me until I finally left, because like I said, 9/11, went to Maui, and now I'm removed from all distraction. I'm basically on a small town put on an island. So there's no distractions like you have New York, all these things going on. And I noticed like because Maui is also to a photography destination, photographers would come to Maui, they would come to the counter, and they would want to look and hire artists there to do their shoots. So suddenly, like, I was getting hired to do shoots outside of work for these photographers. And then it dawned on me, it was like, wait a second, you mean that I can earn in one day the same amount that it takes me dipping lipsticks for 40 hours a week, but in one day? And then that's when it dawned on me that. All right, now I know what a makeup artist was. And I started kind of like researching and now that my eyes are open, now I'm becoming exposed to like Kevin Aucoin and all of these other artists and so forth. And I think that was what was kind of pivotal in getting me started.
So cool. Yeah, that was your aha moment.
Yeah, because eventually what I did is I figured, you know what, I'm going to start working. You know, I did research, like you have to have a portfolio. You know, it's about your presentation of your work, especially that time period, you know, where this was like early 2000s now, people were still using 11 by 14 books. So, you know, we had everything printed. This was still way before social media. So I had to find photographers and models and so forth and start working on my book. And then I did that. But the thing is I eventually decided that in order for me to start with my career, I had to get out of this a small market. So I decided to move to Singapore, where I lived for about a year. And Singapore made sense to me because it's really like the size of, like, Los Angeles is larger than Singapore. Really, Singapore, you can walk from one side to the other.
Sure.
But it's got all, you've got Singapore Vogue, Singapore Elle, all of these major magazines. And I figured that, okay, I could be like a big fish in a small pond. Of course, I learned a lot from this experience, and it didn't really work out that way.
Right.
Because I showed up with, in this huge market, with a small market book. So people would, like, you know, I go see an editor and they would look at my book and they were like, why don't you come back in a couple of years?
Yeah.
And I thought, why? And they're like, well, you know, just, you know, the photography, the makeup, I mean, not makeup, photography, the model. I'm like, but look at the makeup. And they're like, yeah, just come back later. So then that's when I kind of realized the importance about how you present your work and, like, having your portfolios. Like, you work with photographers that know how to shoot the type of makeup that you're doing. You work with the appropriate model for that makeup. You know, if you're going to do hair or wardrobe, it still has to all fit. So it was a pivotal point too, where I learned that you really have to have a cohesiveness with your work. You can't stamp any look on any model because it doesn't work.
Right.
And not all photographers can shoot all makeup. So there's a very monumental moment for me.
Really great points. Definitely want to touch back on the Party Monster reference. And yeah, I mean, that definitely is, it's looked into. I mean, whenever we teach, you know, period makeup or go into back from like the 18th century all the way up until the 90s, like, that's always referenced as well. And I mean, talk about like iconic, legendary times, right? Like, just to the, I'm fascinated with the idea of living avant-garde every day and coming up with a theme to celebrate and make money off at that nightclub, to just be free and be expressive. And like, that was amazing. Like, that, I looked up to that for such a long time.
It was amazing, but it was also, remember, dark. It's a form of survival.
Yeah.
So you have to really put up with a lot. And the thing is, is, you just said the key word. It was a little dark. There was a time period where things just got really dark, and it was right before everything had basically shut down.
Yeah.
And it did have a lot to do with substances. You know, I wasn't doing it at the time, but it's like, that was the key thing that was going around, and it was driving a lot of that darkness. And it came to a point to where in that club scene, you know, what your cool factor was basically how many things you could be on. So people got really messy. And my thing was, like, when I came in, the cool factor was how well you could be put together. And that was what my thing was, is, like, I just loved to create. And so when it did get dark, I was kind of like, okay, it's time to, I was already checking out anyway.
Yeah. Good. I mean, they're all learning experiences. They're building blocks to figuring out your identity and your community, essentially. And I feel, as members of the LGBTQ community, we are survivors, and we are, you know, very resourceful with just having to be and survive day by day. And so I think that's a quality that we all share in common, to just being a human in general and getting by, you know. But I love the fact that you took risks and you were able to just, you know, take it upon yourself to research, do the homework, and, you know, move across the freaking country. Why, first of all, why Maui? And then why Singapore? Like, how did those, well, they're so random, but also risky, and take, and, you know, love that you took that risk.
Well, you know, that's the thing too, is like, before you're 25, you know, people are a little bit more into, they're a little bit more open to take risks. And it has a lot to do with, this is going to sound really hokey, but the frontal lobe of your brain is not fully developed until 25. And that area actually deals with consequence. So that's why, especially me when I was a little kid, I would do stuff and I would be like, why did I do that? I know better, but I still did it. But that has a lot to do, not just with experience, but it's a physiological development.
Absolutely.
So I noticed, like, when I look back, before these years, it was very easy for me to take these risks. And it could be because of that. Then again, it could also be because of that curiosity driven aspect that I was born with. I find that once you get older, as I've been hinting all along, I'm a little bit older, these days,
We
and
all
which
are.
I've,
It's called
we all are,
wisdom.
yeah. And I think you just end up not wanting to take risks as much. So I have to kind of really try to break out of my nature and force myself to. So I guess for people that are listening that are a little bit, that find themselves a little stuck or in a rut, you just remember that you have to do that because, it has a lot to do, it's a physiological and, environmental aspect. But okay, so going into Maui, I mean, like I said, I moved to Maui because I discovered what a makeup artist was. I wanted to up my career, and for me, like I said, Maui had all of its these huge magazines, and I figured, I could be a big fish in a small pond. As far as what was the other? Oh, not Maui. I'm sorry,
You merge
Singapore.
it. It's all good. Don't
Sorry, sorry,
worry.
sorry.
I can edit that. You're fine.
Okay, so for, for moving to Singapore, it was really all, about, being a big fish in a small pond because you had, Singapore Elle, Singapore Vogue, and I figured that's made sense for me to actually move there and try there. And also too, honestly, I'd always wanted to live in Asia. I'd always wanted to live in Asian countries. I mean, we'll just be honest,
And they're cool, and their fashion's cool, and they definitely are
It's
always
just
ahead of their
different
time.
thinking, and it's something that I really wanted to experience. And as far as Maui goes, that was 6 months after 9/11, and 9/11 was, a lot of people are really young. I mean, and don't remember or weren't there, but for those of us that were, it was, there's a lot of things that you just don't know unless you were actually there. And it's just the one for like a month, there was just silence in New York. For a couple of weeks, there were no vehicles that were allowed in like lower Manhattan. So people were so traumatized that this, like, hey, yo, New York that you kind of think about, people were just whispering to each other because they'd all
It was
been
too
gut
aggressive.
punched. And people don't realize that even after 9/11, there were still so many suicides that were going on. And even though I would be at work, somebody would come in and say, like, oh my God, I just saw somebody jump off the building. So this entire air of is like was just like, I need to get out of here. And I, a posting came in for a position on Maui, and
Got
thought, I've
it.
never been there, I'll just go. But like I said earlier in the con in the conversation, it worked for me because it removed me from distraction, and I was actually able to figure out my path because I didn't have those distractions.
And it is such a beautiful island as far as like Mother Nature and having tranquility and peace and no pollution and no noise pollution, really, for you to just like reflect, reset, and figure out what you want to do.
It was that, but I mean, that's great for the first year. But
As
after that, you want to see
a
tall
city boy,
buildings, you want to see fashion, you want to see stuff. So it was really like, the
My
nature and
tan is
everything was
great.
great, but it was, yeah, my tan was awesome. But at the same time, I was like, okay, I'm itching now. I'm getting hungry. I need to do something with my career. So that helped.
And that's the drive and the passion as an artist that, we all kind of share. It's like that hunger of just keep feeling those like butterflies and what's the next project and how else am I gonna grow and expand beyond this? I love that. So cool. Can you share with our listeners and viewers what practices or routines do you place to nurture your creativity and spirituality while running your business?
So practices. Okay, I'm the type of person, I think most artists are, is like they really need to be alone.
Yeah.
To recharge. Mm-hmm. And, you know, I, especially post COVID, you know, I still have a lot of, you know, just like anybody else, I still have a lot of anxieties even to this day.
Mm-hmm.
And, you know, it's one of those things that where if I'm in a function or something where, especially where it's about me, it's great. You know, I love it and I love to be around people and I love to share. But at the same time, you know, we have a social battery.
Yeah.
And for me, it takes like almost a week to actually recharge. And I really just have to be alone. So being Good. Alone has a lot to do with part of those practices.
I love that.
As far as, thank you. As far as work goes, in order to keep myself inspired, I really don't look at what other people are doing. And I know that's really hard, especially in this time of social media, because you're really just thrown other people's work or anything that, you know, people you aren't even following in front of you, you know, because of the way the algorithms are.
Right.
But for me, like once I started to figure out what my style was and my niche, I really stopped looking at what other people were doing because it, that way I wouldn't burn their work into the back of my head. So I know it's hard these days because of social media. So I would say like before you go into a job or anything for like that day, I don't look at social media because I don't want to get that ingrained in me. Or if I'm having to create something for later, I just take a break.
That's cool.
So
I like that.
We really have to take a break with social media just on other levels too, because everybody's shouting, everybody's pointing, everybody's trying to sell something. And it really kind of, it really zaps your spirituality. It zaps you emotionally.
Oh, I love that. No, that's perfect for our listeners and viewers to have a digital detox. Is definitely on a good to-do list to maybe do periodically a couple months or so. I know I definitely do that. I'm coming up on one soon. Birthday comes up and it's just, I like to do that as like a cleanse and a detox of just in general of just a lot of stimulations, including social media. Thank you for sharing that. That's really helpful.
Sure.
Can you also share any tips or advice for aspiring creatives looking to incorporate more, you know, practices and creativity into their work and just expand?
One, I would say, I understand when you are starting out and you're kind of looking at things to either mimic or, you know, it's like your own homework, you know, you're kind of like redoing something in order to learn how to do it. I understand that aspect. But once you get to a point to where you feel like you are you have a style or something, and you won't know what that is. You'll be told it because you'll think that your niche is your, you know, the way you blend and the way you do eyeshadows, but it's actually the way, maybe the way you do skin or the way you do the lip shape. And this is something that you won't realize on your own. You'll be told it because people will see a consistency throughout your work. So once that happens, again, going back to like just not looking at what other people are doing, because then that way your style can grow and cultivate. Yeah. And what comes from what your style comes from really is your own personal experiences, like your favorite song when you were 15, your street that you lived on when you were 18.
Yeah, yeah.
Your best friend when you were 20. All of these things depict how you draw a line. Now, I'll give you an example because I know that sounds a little weird.
No, I get it. I totally get it.
Well, like whenever you do something. But explain
for those of us that don't understand it. Yeah, yeah.
Sorry, I'm trying to speak really fast because I've got a lot of content and like, and I know I have
we're
like
here for it. We're here for it.
You're I'm good. Here for a little minute.
we embrace it.
So one of the examples is like of this is like, say you do something really creative and then you go back to, you're thinking, oh, wow, I really want to do this with a, redo this on a, with the, maybe with a better model or better photographer or something. And you go back later to revisit it and you try to do it, but it's not the same. You can't get the shapes the same. You can't get, it's like off. It's not, it's the same. And the reason why is because you've changed since the last time you did that. And this actually goes into, because I was really thinking about like why people have an emotional response to art. I really had to question and like think about it, because once I became visible, I had people coming up to me with a very strong emotional response, like crying. And, you know, I'm a Capricorn. I don't know how to deal with emotion. You know, just
shut
call
up.
me
You
Spock.
Are.
You know?
When's your birthday? Totally. I'm a Capricorn too.
Oh, wow. Congratulations.
Yay. I know. The same to you. Congratulations, you're
actually,
a Capricorn.
I'm coming
that
up
is such
January
a Capricorn
4th.
Response. I'm December 27th.
Yeah. Oh, yours is really coming up.
Yeah.
Well,
sorry,
congratulations.
I didn't mean to interrupt.
No.
Continue.
So,
sorry.
But yeah, I mean, you know, so I'm seeing this girl crying and I'm like, oh my God, what do I do? You know, well, and I'm thinking really fast in my head, like, okay, Rashar, give her a hug, tell her it's nice to meet her, it's okay. You know, I really had to talk to myself because this was kind of freaking me out. I wasn't used to this. But the thing is I would sit back and I would try to wonder, like, why did these people have such a strong emotional response to my work? And I didn't get it, because I know what goes into it. I know the thought process. We never really are fully aware or can comprehend how other people view us or our work. We hear it, but sometimes we don't believe it, you know. And I view myself as a regular person. I eat and I fart just like anybody else, you know. So
yes.
I don't view myself in that way. So what I was thinking of and like really trying to analyze it, and I realized the thing about art. Remember I said our personal experiences depict how we draw a line, right?
Absolutely.
It works opposite to for the viewer, because what it is they'll look at that line and they don't realize it, but it's triggering something in their personal experiences, because
yep.
this came from your personal experiences.
Yep.
So you don't realize it consciously, but that's why some art will affect some people in certain ways. They'll have emotional response to it, or somebody might not. And it's because of that particular shape actually triggered a response to their past. And the color is actually what adds to the emotional aspect of it as well, because colors have emotional or things tied to them. So once I realized this, I was like, okay, now I get it. Now I know why they're seeing their own experiences with my work, but they're also, people also see their own experiences when they look at art and paintings and, you know, photography and thing. And it's all about the lines.
Yeah. No, that's so cool. Yeah, I love that you're touching on that. That's so perfect for Mindful Artist podcast, because it really embodies the philosophy behind why I wanted to create this and the emotional connection that we have. And I've always said, like, for me, hair and makeup is emotional, and it's not only about how the artist is feeling and the energy they're evoking into the craft, but then how the model feels, how the client feels, and then how the final product is revealed, and then how the audience is receiving it. So it's this full circle spectrum of just, you know, energetically, synergetically connecting. And it, to me, what you just said and what I'm just saying is that we're all one. We're literally all one connected species, passionate about color, life, light, experience. And I love that so much. Like, that is like, that's such a perfect segue into, I wanted to ask you personally, Roshar, what do you do for you? How do you take care? I know you have some alone time, but you take care of a lot of people. You take care of models, you take care of agencies and clients, but what's your self-care? What does Roshar do for Roshar?
Well, you know, God, this is a really loaded thing. So, well, the thing is pre-COVID, I had a schedule that was really nuts. I mean, 6 months out of the year, I was in Asia. And that's not all at once. It would be like 1 month here, 2 months in Asia, 2 weeks here, 1 week in New York, 3 months in Asia, you know, so it was like this. And I mean, there were situations where I would be in five different countries in 1 week. So
that's a lot.
Yeah, I did kind of let, you know, I was just working. And the thing is, you know, luckily, because of, you know, I do attribute a lot to the time period and the generation that I came in, you know, I was able to do that type of schedule. Because otherwise, you know, a lot of people, it's like, it's really grueling. It's not easy. And you really can't have emotional, you know, fully emotional connections in a way. I mean, you can as far as like making friends in different areas, but as far as having a romantic relationship, I mean, anything that's more than a night is really hard. So it's really hard to have that kind of, to have like a full on relationship with that. So I had to develop that relationship with myself. I had to
be
comfortable, like taking myself out on a date, taking myself out to see a movie, you know, doing these things to really like reestablish that connection with myself. And even if it went to talking to myself, I had to become my own best friend. So once COVID happened and, you know, 85% of my work was overseas. So that meant that 85% of my work stopped. So I really had to kind of reevaluate. And then, of course, we had the writer's strike, and that seeped into fashion as well, you know, immediately hit the writers and everyone, but eventually it started seeping into everything. And it was a thing where, okay, I'm not working. What am I going to do? Okay, I'm going to go to the gym. I'm going to, you know, really work on myself. So we look at it in this situation as like, if you don't, there's a timing for everything. And if you don't listen to that timing, your environment will shift to force you to do what you need to do. And for me, that my environment shifted because it was time for me to really start taking care of myself. Because like I said, after COVID, you know, there was anxieties. There were a lot of things. I did go into some dark places, you know, not alleyways, but we're talking about like, you know,
I understand.
Emotionally.
Yeah.
But there's something that I would like to share too that was quite fascinating about this, because like I said, you know, things, you know, I was really neglecting myself. So health, emotionally, spiritually, everything was just really down. And I caught myself really saying like, I need help. And, but I didn't know how. I didn't know, you know, I didn't have, you know, I wasn't working so frequently. So therapy wasn't an option, you know. I mean, you can only talk to friends so much, and, you know, sometimes you just don't, you know, this Capricorn aspect, and I'm sure a lot of viewers have it too, is like, we just don't want to be a burden. And we also don't want to look like we're incapable. So we kind of hide things. So one of the things that I learned when I thought, okay, you know what, I'm going to try an experiment. And what I did was, is I listened to music, and we're talking about, I was really in a bad place. So I listened to music that only gave me joy. And we're talking about the type of joy that you would listen to that actually makes you want to almost cry. Because it's just so beautiful. And it's so like, it's just this beauty and this joy.
Well,
so
music is very spiritual too.
Well, mostly. I would say a lot of top 40 stuff is made for formulatic and it's made for sales, so I have a very strong thing against, you know, popular music. But what happened is but I won't deny a check. So that meant that, you know, no Nine Inch Nails, nothing introspective, nothing like that would like, because being in that really dark place is very seductive. You almost want to stay there. And it's like, you try a happy thought, but then this comes in and it just kind of reels you in. It's very seductive. So I found that when I listened to music that did that, it started to rewire my brain. And I noticed after a week, to even have a negative thought felt like I was pretending. It didn't make sense. It was so easy. It kind of like pulled me out of it because it was a rewiring. Like therapy and things like that, that I find, so I'm sure it help, it may help for other people, but I find that when you go to this type of place, you actually need a rewiring. So music was like one of the key things that really pulled me out of it. So I started doing that, going to the gym, and it's like that place is just so foreign to me now. So for people that are, going through something, it's something to kind of think about.
First of all, congratulations on having that awareness.
Thank
And
you.
second of all, thank you for being so vulnerable and expressive with something, so
Well,
emotional
thank
and
you.
challenging that can really shape you. And I'm proud of you. Like,
Thank you.
congratulations to recognize that and have that awareness and be able to say, no, like, I don't want to feel like this. I'm going to physically change something. And you're right, you're touching on neurological science that is effective. Like, you have those negative thoughts, which we all have, inner saboteur, RuPaul calls it inner bitch, whatever you want to call it. And the human brain is born with that genetically. We're not even aware of the fact that we have two fears that are genetically ingrained into our human brains. But my point is that you are proof of being able to have that acknowledgement on that negative thought, and then you filtered it, you counteracted it with something positive, and you continue to do so. And yeah, I just want to commend you with that.
Thank
Congratulations. And thank
you.
you for sharing that to our viewers, because I feel that's very helpful. And that's why I wanted to create this space, because I know what artists go through. I have been there as well. My mother suffered from a long history of mental health issues and substance abuse and a caretaker. So I totally relate to, and what you're saying resonates with me a lot. This leads me, I wanted to have more time with you, but this leads me into another
Sorry, I told
really,
you I talk a
don't
lot.
be sorry. I'm gonna have to have you back, but this leads me into a really fun part of the podcast called Wrapping Up Mindful Artists, Rapid Cues. So I'm gonna ask you three questions, Roshar, just where you are
Okay.
at the top of your head. Don't let it hopefully think too much, but just see
Okay.
intuitively what you think this answer is. So question number one, Roshar, who is your hero and why?
Oh shit. I mean, shoot. Don't have one.
I've said in the past, sometimes it can be a personal hero, or it can be a career hero, or you could be your own hero. It sounds like you kind of are.
Yeah, I would, I don't want to sound egoy or anything, but I don't really look up to people, at least like not off the think I could think anything I can think off of my head. It's more about, I've had such a sink or swim life
You have.
that it's all been about my choice on how I'm going to move further. So I didn't have a chance. I came up when there weren't mentors. I don't really have anybody that I just, I would have to say it's myself.
Hell yeah. I love that answer. No, that's fucking
Okay.
awesome. That's great. No, and that, again, taking yourself out on dates, having selfish love, being okay with, your individuality, your independence, like that's dope. Like, that's awesome.
Thank you.
Kudos to you.
It's
I
really
love that.
about reestablishing the connection with yourself. And we have to do that because it's like we're in this body, we have to know, constantly keep ourselves in check, why am I thinking this thought? Understanding, leaving room to understand context with things, because a lot of people, especially with social media, since everybody is kind of being forced to have an opinion,
Yeah.
there is a lot of context that people are losing. They're looking at something, they're not thinking of context, and they just fire off. And it's really crazy the way
Like, where is the
everything is right now.
substance? Yeah.
That, and people get lose jobs because of it,
Yeah.
and because of the reaction. So I think like that's why I want to reiterate, it's not just about really establishing the relationship with yourself, but also to like understanding context of what's being around you, because that's a part of it too.
Yes.
You know, thinking before reacting. Mm-hmm. And, you know, really kind of like, wait, you know, let me understand this first before I just shoot out. Because in that way, you know, there's a backlash that'll end up happening. So anyway, okay, sorry, I'm going to say
that. No, you're great. A question that I ask myself often that you just triggered was, you know, sometimes, because we're all energy, right? Or sometimes meeting someone or having an interaction that triggers something and that you might not vibe. I often want to reflect on myself and just ask myself, oh, well, what is it about? What is it about me that I'm projecting on that individual that maybe I see a little bit of myself in that person that I'm not vibing?
Yeah.
So I try to challenge my human brain and learn from those experiences and see how I can approach the next individual less judgment. But then at the end, I'm realizing, oh, I'm judging myself. Like that's what's really happening. But so I love the fact that you have this amazing relationship with your self-awareness, and that's strength that comes from wisdom and experience. And I mean, I think for us too, coming from post AIDS crisis and Club Kid, you know, and 9/11, like those are a lot of like tragedies that really kind of shape who you are, and you grow from that and expand too. So it's almost like human has to hit rock bottom to climb back up and rediscover and reinvent themselves. So
yeah,
good job. Thank you.
And there's nothing wrong with that.
No,
there's nothing wrong with that. So if people are going through it, it's part of the experience.
And knowing you have community, which we are your community, and you can come back and re-listen to feel that love and support. Cool. Wrapping up Mindful Artist Driver Cues, question number two. I'm looking forward to this answer. What is your favorite music album of all time?
Gosh, album?
I know it's not the top 40s, so
yeah,
this is another way that I like.
It's probably going to be something that people would have to Google.
And I'm here for that. This is why I asked this too, because, okay, you talked about being on an island. What if you're on a deserted island, one Discman, one headphone, and there's one album? What are you going to listen to?
Oh my God, I've got a huge story. Did you know that about me, like running off to the island, Northern Marianas Islands, to escape Y2K? And I thought I had to live in the jungle with an army survival manual.
You really did that?
Yeah.
Sorry,
I've had a very lived life. This should be more than an hour.
Roshar, this is going to be the beginning of your book. I'm supporting this journey and this mission. I wrote a book recently. It's been a year since I published it. Whatever help you need, I feel like there is a book in your future. I see
that. Well, it's not done yet.
No, I know, but I'm saying, like, start it. And I know there's an audience to hear that. Like, it just sounds like cinematic.
So it's funny when you mention them, like, oh yeah, that's right, I've got like that. Yeah, there's a lot.
I'm happy to help. So what is your favorite music album of all time?
I don't have one of all time. I just have several. Top three. Okay, probably Supernature by Goldfrapp.
Yes.
Or it could even be the Black Cherry album.
Another good one too.
Yeah, I do love Goldfrapp. I love music that's got a little bit of a cerebral element to it. Mm-hmm. Another one that I'm trying to think about things that I just albums that I listened to constantly.
That's what I'm talking about.
I had their tape cassette or their CD.
You let it play from track one to the last.
Yeah,
track.
Yeah,
yeah.
Absolutely. The other one would probably be by Garbage. What was that one that there was a really famous for, and it had like a pink cover.
Yeah, I know which one you're talking about, but
it's a really famous one. It had Stupid Girl and all of those things in it. But yeah, I would probably say those are the ones that I kind of had on repeat from start to finish.
Only Happy When It Rains.
I think it was after that.
Oh, okay. That's a good one.
Was it version 2, V2? Or version 2?
Top albums are...
Or maybe it was just
No
Garbage.
Gods. Yeah, no. I think it was self-titled. Yeah,
Okay,
you're right.
maybe it was self-titled. And it's pink, right?
Yeah, super deluxe
Pink or
edition.
orange?
The 20th
Okay.
anniversary. Yeah. Version 2.0 is a second one. So the self-titled album is the one you were talking about. Good job.
Okay, maybe. All right.
Yes, I'm here for that. Yes, cool.
Hey.
I knew you were going to pick something awesome and rad. All right, wrapping up my
Music's.
bars. Go ahead.
Oh, I was
You're
gonna say
good.
music's actually really important to me, especially like when I'm on set. You know, if it's something that
It sets the tone.
it's something that's formulaic and kind of like what's viewed as popular music right now. Because a lot of, and I say that because a lot of popular music, you know, is decided by a group of like 50,
Right.
70-year-old men in an office, you know, seven of them trying to figure out what's a catchy hook. And I find that when I'm listening to that kind of music, it's very difficult for me to be creative. If I listen to a popular
Right.
artist, whatever work I'm going to do is going to kind of mirror what that popular artist is doing or has been done on them. So
Yeah.
it's something that I have to be really careful about.
I literally bring a Bose speaker and my iPad on set wherever I go,
Yeah.
just in case. Just
And you
in
hook it up
case.
before anybody else can ask.
Yes, to set the tone and set the
Yeah.
vibes, because like you said, then the your hands are going to produce
Yeah.
what you're hearing, melodically. So I love that. Thank you.
Sure.
All right, Roshar, wrapping up Mindful Artist Rapid Cues. Last question. What is your favorite quote of all time?
I would say find your comfort zone. Find your comfort zone and stay away from it.
Oh, and who said that?
I can't remember.
I'll look it up, but that,
It's
yes.
not, no. I heard it from like a regular person. It wasn't from a, do you mean the
Okay.
famous quote?
No, that I'll take
Okay,
that. This is a
okay,
Roshar quote.
okay.
Find your comfort zone and your comfort zone and stay away from
And
it.
stay away from it.
Absolutely. I've talked about this many times in the past of human brain wanting to be comfortable. You're not going to evolve. You're not going to see your expansion and what you're capable of and your true potentials until you are uncomfortable in the fact of like facing that fear. So those little fearful thoughts you're often having, get used to them because they're what's going to keep you going.
Yeah.
And being
Make friends with
uncomfortable,
them.
yeah, literally know how to like live with them, because yeah, it's going to be that annoying roommate that you're just going to have to deal with for the rest of your life. So Roshar, you are amazing. This was so cool and so fun. We need to have another hour because this was, I don't feel like enough time, and I've learned so much and looked up to your work for such a long time, and to have this conversation, I'm very grateful for. So thank you. Where can we follow you? What are you doing soon in the next coming up year? Anything that you would like to plug?
I don't have anything coming up. So I'm just,
Being
yeah.
present, living
Just being
Roshar's best
present.
life, as we
Yeah,
should be.
things just pop up and I just do them. So,
I say a book is coming up and it's just Roshar, like,
we'll
period.
see.
I'm just saying. Go ahead.
So, my social media is Roshar Official on Instagram, and I do have a website, www.roshar.com, and it's
Love it.
Roshar.
Beautiful. Thank you
Thank you.
so much. I appreciate you, your energy, your love,
Thank
your
you.
light. This was so cool. You guys, this is Roshar and Andrew Velasco with Mindful Artist Podcast. Make sure that you subscribe, follow, and give us those reviews. That song you're about to hear is called Mi Corazón, written by myself, produced by Aaron McClendon. You can download Mi Corazón wherever you stream your favorite music and share this podcast. Tag us on Instagram. If you are a creative person trying to balance your life while being an entrepreneur, email me. Maybe you'll be a guest at mindfulartistpodcast@gmail.com. You guys, thank you so much, my kings and queens and all in between. Go out there and make an impact in somebody's life. Until our next episode, much love and light. Bye, Roshar. See you.
Bye-bye.
Bye, guys.